In many applications, it is necessary to generate pulses in output. The main issues that must be analyzed and solved during the design phase concern the frequency, when pulse frequency modulation is applied, or duration, pulse width modulation in this case is employed, and relative time inaccuracies that can affect the pulses themselves. In case we are using a pulse width modulation, it is assumed that the systems we are facing are sensible to the average value of the input signal that is provided. A typical example is proposed by a few control systems of the temperature in an environment, or generally speaking, by those phenomena that are characterized by a slow evolution. If we consider a signal made of pulses with amplitude A and with constant period P, with duration can be considered variable in the range 0p, the average of this signal is given by the product of the amplitude times the duration divided by the period, as shown in the slide 71. If we call duty cycle the duration divided by the period, we can say that the average value is equal to the product of the amplitude of the signal times its own duty cycle. In the figure, you can appreciate several pulses, D1, D2, D3, and so on, whose width is modulated, and whose average value is highlighted in bold. I mean that for every period, for every interval, those bold horizontal lines represent the average value assumed by the signal in that interval. It is possible to observe that for pulses D1, D2, D3, D4 and D5, the duration is increasing, and correspondingly the average value augments. Instead, for pulses D6, D7, D8, the duration diminishes, and correspondingly the average value diminishes indeed. So, for those systems affected by a very high inertia, that is, with time constants very higher with respect to the value of the period P, we are able to produce, approximated analog behavior, analog information, with the very elementary generation of a signal with only two levels, 1, 0, on, off. In this case, in fact, what to us seems long, that is the duration of the period, will become very, very, very short compared to the answers of a very slow system. And those horizontal lines that we have drawn in bold in the picture will become very, very small and will be approximated more or less to points. Now, joining all those points, the overall curve that we will obtain is more or less a continuous curve, like an analog function, instead of a curve like the one we are seeing now in the picture, that modifies its own values on a step-by-step basis. In this sense, we understand that we produce an analog output information using a very simple binary signal. The quantization error relative to the average value Vm is the ratio between the time granularity of the clock that allow us to control the duration of the signal divided by the period. Of course, this could represent a problem, and however, if the period is enough big, that is more than 100 milliseconds, and if the accuracy required is not very high, it is possible to adopt a completely software management for the generation of the PWM pulses. However, if very accurate calculations and time generations are needed, we are obliged to make usage of suitable hardware circuits like those that exploit counters and timers. Slide 72 is related to an exam test that represents a typical situation into which the PWM pulse width modulation can be applied. The text says that we have a system that is able to heat an incubator at 20 degrees for 2 minutes using a typical microprocessor equipped with a parallel port connected to a buffer and to an amplification stage with gain equal to 10. Let's suppose that the ratio between environmental temperature and the average applied power, the so-called thermal efficiency, is 80 Celsius on watts provided, and that the heater can be electrically modeled as a 1 kilo-ohm resistance. Suppose to heat for 10 minutes at 30 Celsius degrees, for 5 minutes at 20 Celsius degrees, and for 5 minutes again at 10 Celsius degrees. The question is, what is the final temperature reached? The situation we want to highlight is related to the management of the temperature inside an environment, into which basically we control the temperature by forcing a suitable current across a resistor that in the picture is called ZR, and this current is provided by means of the operational amplifier A that is supplied between 25 volts and minus 25 volts, because we need enough big current to have enough electrical energy that is transformed into heat. This operational amplifier in turn is controlled by a suitable signal that exits from the port of a microprocessor. This signal is not provided directly to the amplifier. Instead, we have in the middle a buffer, an operational amplifier configured in buffer mode, that basically is used to separate the digital part of the circuit from the process, from the application, both in terms of impedances and in terms of different voltages that are supplied to the circuits. The bit that is controlled by the port or through the port of the microprocessor is pulled up to 5 volts by means of the resistor that is shown in the picture. So as when the PIO output is zero, we have a current that goes to the ground through the PIO circuits themselves. Instead, when we have a high level voltage written into the output of the port, we don't have any current that crosses the resistor. The first part of the problem says that we need to heat up this environment, bringing the temperature up to 20 degrees for 2 minutes. And we need that the control is made by a software program of the microprocessor that manages the output port, with the hypothesis that the gain of the amplification stage is 10. Moreover, for sake of simplicity in the exercise, we introduce a transformation coefficient 80 degrees per watt that basically expresses the relationship between the electrical power produced by the electronic circuit and the thermal power needed by the environment. In other words, we are saying that we will have 80 Celsius degrees per each watt of electric power produced by the circuit itself. Finally, we suppose that the resistance on which we want the current to pass is 1 kilo ohm. The second part of the text envision the idea that we repeat such an approach and considering three possible iterations into which with different values we apply again such a procedure, we obtain at the end a particular temperature. So the exercise is made by two separated questions into which the concepts can be somehow repeated, but at the end we will see that there is a little difference in the consideration that we have to make. At the first sight, it may seem a complex problem, but it really is very easy to be solved, considering that we can exploit in such a case the PWM approach, the pulse width modulation approach that we have seen just now. We know that the relationship between the electrical power generated and the voltage that is applied on a suitable load is that WEL is equal to the square of the voltage divided by the load, in this case the value of the resistor. Looking at slide 73, we see, therefore, that the electrical power that we are able to apply is 0.625 watts. This is due to the fact that the voltage that corresponds to a logic signal high, one logic signal provided by the parallel port, basically in volts is 5 volts. This signal is sent from the port to the input of the amplifier with the gain equal to 10 that amplifies it at 50 volts, but clearly since the range of the voltage supplied to the amplifier is plus 25, minus 25, the maximum voltage that will really arrive on the load is plus 25. In other words, the amplifier saturates. So we have to consider 25 volts power 2 squared divided by 1 kilo ohm, and of course we have the value, that the numerical value that is indicated into the formula. Considering the transformation effect that we have previously mentioned, that is 80 Celsius degrees per watt, we will have a final temperature that is equal to 50 Celsius degrees. But is this what is requested by the exercise? Of course, no, because we have seen at the beginning of the exam that the requirement is 20 degrees. So what we can do? What is the suitable approach in this case? This is the right case for applying pulse width modulation, because the process that we are considering is a process whose nature is very slow. The process is similar to an accumulator that accumulate energy, and after a certain time it reaches the thermal status that we want it has. We can say that if it would be necessary to simulate, to represent with an electrical circuit this kind of application process, it would be good, it would be the right choice to use a capacitor whose transfer function is an integral, that is exactly an accumulator. And as we have learned in the courses of the first years, the integral function more or less is a function that evaluates the average of its own argument. In other words, we can say that the temperature that is reached after the supplying of a suitable electrical signal that is integrated basically is represented by the average of what is provided to the process. In other words, we can say that we have a process, we have an application that is sensible to the average value of what it is given. And this is the ideal case for applying pulse width modulation. How to do this? The text says that the signal is applied for 2 minutes, better to say 120 seconds. In this period, we can envision to apply the signal equal to 25 volts, keeping the output of the microprocessor high, logic level 1. But we can modulate, we can regulate the duration of the time into which this signal is kept high within the interval 120 seconds, so as to reach the desired electrical power that will provide us a desired thermal power that will correspond in turn to the required temperature. We can say, therefore, that in some sense we have to apply a reversal approach to the solution of this problem with respect to those calculations that we made at the beginning. And we can ask to ourselves, what is the electrical power that is necessary to apply to the process to reach 20 Celsius degrees on average? First of all, we have to divide 20 by the coefficient of transformation, I mean 80 degrees per watt, and we will obtain 0.25 watts. Now we have to adapt the duration of the signal so as to reach on average this kind of electrical power. From the previous expression, the electrical power is given by the square of the voltage divided by the value of the resistor. We will obtain that the voltage necessary to obtain 0.5 watts is given to the square root of 1000 times 0.25. That is more or less 15.8 volts. And now we have to adapt the duty cycle of the pulse width modulation to have 15.8 volts, knowing that the signal that we are applying to the circuit is 25. This means that we have to adapt the ratio between delta T, that is the duration of the pulse, and the overall interval into which the control is performed, that is 120 seconds. By exploiting the recipe that we have seen in slide 71, we can say that the ratio between the duration of the pulse and of the period, that is the duty cycle of the signal, must be equal to the final average voltage applied to the load divided the amplitude of the signal that we are using. In other words, delta T divided 120 seconds must be equal to 15.8 volts divided 25 volts. Due to this equation, delta T must be equal to 76.8 seconds, that is the time necessary for which the signal in output of the parallel port of the microprocessor must be kept high to obtain an average voltage applied to the resistor equal to 15.8 volts that transformed in thermal power by means of the coefficient that we mentioned in the text of the exam allow to keep in average the temperature of the environment to 20 degrees in the period that we have considered 120 seconds. Of course, the temperature will not reach this value immediately, but since we have said that the process is a capacitor, we will have an initial increment in the temperature and we will reach the asymptotic value after a certain interval of time, but of course this is not considered by the exam since we start from the hypothesis that the average temperature assumed by the process corresponds to the average signal provided in that interval to the process itself by such a kind of electronic circuits. And clearly the concept of averaging is an approximation that says that a certain quantity is kept fixed for all the interval that we are considering. Also, this is not completely true. Now let's come to the second part of the questions in the exercise. The idea is to heat the system for three periods of time. The first period lasts 10 minutes, so as to achieve 30 Celsius degrees. And this means that the power supply is regulated, so as to have 30 degrees. The second period is 5 minutes long to have 20 Celsius degrees, and the last one is 5 minutes long so as to achieve 10 Celsius degrees. The final question is, what is the final temperature that the system reaches? We have already said that the system is sensible not to the final value that we provide to it at the end of each period, but instead to the average of what it receives. In other words, the text, the problem, says to us that we have a heater like such a kind of device with a resistor supplied with a suitable current that provides warm air at 30 degrees, then 20 degrees, then 10 degrees, and what we have at the end. The most intuitive idea is, it is shown in slide 74, to calculate a so-called linear combination of all the contributes that we give to the process in the different periods of time and average them. That is, if we multiply the temperature T1 that we want to achieve times the duration delta T1 plus the same product T2 times delta T2 plus the same product T3 times delta T3 considered in the third period. And this quantity is divided by the sum of the overall periods of time, we obtain 22.5 Celsius degrees. In other words, we considered the weighted average with respect the overall time into which we provide power supply. That is, for how much time we apply those temperatures? 20 minutes, and in those 20 minutes we provide a certain temperature. 10 minutes, and in those 10 minutes we provide another temperature. 5 minutes, and in those 5 minutes we give a final value. Since the process works as an accumulator, it could be a good idea to evaluate a linear combination of all the terms, including the three provided temperatures. Of course, since this is the course of industrial informatics, the problem is not solved in such a way, but we have to identify a correct procedure to carry out this to feed the correct voltages to this heater in the three different periods that we are considering. In this sense, we could replicate what we have done in the first part of the solution. This is very easy to do because we have in the first case a temperature of 30 Celsius degree that will be divided by the transformation coefficient equal to 80 to obtain the corresponding power necessary in that period, and finally to obtain the corresponding voltage we must evaluate the square root of that power multiplied by the resistor. That is, as you can see in the formulas written in slide 74, T1 equal 30, then WL1 is equal to 30 divided by 80. From here we have that V1, the voltage in the first period, will be the square root of 1000, the value of the resistor, times 30 divided by 80. And this provides an output voltage equal to 19.36 volts. The same road can be followed also to calculate the second voltage. T2 is 20 Celsius degrees, then we have a power to be provided in that interval equal to 20 on 80, from which a voltage equal to 15.8 volts comes out, and finally T3, 10 Celsius degrees, will correspond to electrical power equal to 0.125 watts, and finally we have a voltage that is the square root of 125, approximately 11.2 volts. Finally, to establish the correspondent duration of the intervals of time into which we have to apply the first voltage, the second voltage, the third voltage, be careful, on average in the period, we evaluate the ratio between the voltage, let's say target we want to have, related to the maximum amplitude that we are applying to the resistor, that is, as we have already said, 25 volts. And we multiply, let's say, this ratio, this fraction, to the amplitude of the corresponding period into which we decide that we want to have the different temperatures, 30, 20, and 10. Looking again at the formula reported in slide 74, we see that the three durations will be obtained by calculating the ratio of V1, V2, V3 divided Vmax, that is 25, and multiplying these terms by delta T1, delta T2, delta T3, that are the three periods of time into which we apply the different temperatures. I leave the calculations to you for exercise, but now we have the final answer, that is all the what we need to do to perform such a sequence of temperature applications to the process, so as to reach the final one. Clearly, the duration of the time intervals and also the period will be obtained by using suitable timers and counters, but we have already seen in one of the previous lessons how this can be performed. Finally, I want to highlight with a remark a possible error that could be made, and in one of the previous exams some students did. Starting from the concept, the idea that the process is sensible to the average of the signal that is applied, one can suppose that the system itself is not sensible to the thermal power provided to it for three different periods of time, but instead to the average of the voltages that are applied to it. This doesn't bring to a right solution, because if we look at the formulas, we see that the relationship between the voltages and the temperature is not linear, but instead quadratic, and this makes the difference. In fact, the temperature is proportional to the power, but the power is the square of the voltage. So if we evaluate instead of an average function of the temperatures weighted with their own duration times, if instead of doing this we evaluate the voltages, clearly we will obtain a different result. And when we do the square of each voltage and the multiplication for the coefficient, we will have at the end a temperature that will be slightly different from the one we have achieved. Doing the calculations, we obtain a final temperature that is more or less 21 Celsius degrees. This is not dramatically wrong, but is different from the real behavior of the process. And the difference is in the not linear correspondence between the temperature and the applied voltage. So the weighted averages are different in the cases, in the two cases we have described. Now, we change completely perspective and we deal with that part of the course that faces with motors and some mechanical issues that will be important when considered from the computer science point of view, that is, how to control them from microprocessor. About the characteristics of the motors, in particular of the direct current motor that we are considering as the first one, we only make a couple of considerations that it is necessary to remember. The first one is about the three physical magnitude that characterize the motor, that are the angular position expressed with theta in the slide 75, the rotational velocity omega, and the torque Cm. In other words, a direct current motor is typically used to perform mainly two, maybe three tasks. That is, the control of the motor is made to apply a force to a process, and typically this force is provided to an object that is located not close to the motor, but at a certain distance. Second, the motor is typically used to control or to apply a rotational movement to a system, and we need to control the velocity of this rotational movement. Instead, it is quite rare that a direct current motor is used to control an angular position. Theoretically, it is possible to control the motor even for the identification of an angular position, but this is quite complicated, sometimes not accurate, and therefore not diffused. So we have reported this kind of output, let's say this kind of manipulated the variable in the slide, but this is not typical usage. A second consideration that we have to do is about limitations that can affect the direct current motor. In particular, a couple of critical values that usually are associated to the motor in terms of current absorption. In other words, a direct current motor absorbs a current that is proportionally typically to the torque that we want it exerts. But there is a critical situation named stale, in which the motor is required to run or rotate as at its maximum velocity, but the object or the device that is applied to the shaft of the motor features a very big weight, so as to prevent the motor from the rotation. In this case, the motor is power supplied so as to rotate at its maximum velocity, but the object attached to the motor doesn't allow it. This is the stall. And in this situation, the motor absorbs a very high current, many degrees of magnitudes higher than the typical current it absorbs in nominal condition, and of course it runs the risk to have damages or even to break out. So we have two values that we need to keep in mind when we are in the stall situation, and for this reason every motor is associated with the information of the stalemate current and the stalemate torque, that are the maximum current and the maximum torque that can be applied to a motor without breaking out it. Of course, these two values correspond to the maximum object that we can hope to make to rotate with that kind of motor. Looking inside to the motor itself, we have to consider what equations describe its behavior and how they evolve when characterizing the behavior of the motor, considering different objects that can be applied to its drive shaft. In particular, we consider a situation that is related to the application of adapters to the drive shaft of the motor itself, situation typical in industrial processes, because the motor usually rotates at a velocity that is very higher compared to what it is really necessary during the movement and therefore is required. As a consequence, we need some devices that basically are gear wheels or cog wheels that reduce the rotating velocity of the motor. In other words, we pass from a situation into which we have the motor, the shaft, and the load or the object that we want to make to rotate, to another one into which, for example, we have our first cog wheel connected to the shaft of the motor, and another cog wheel that is connected to the shaft on which the load is applied. And as we can see in the slide 76, the two radius of the two cog wheels are not equal. There is instead an integer ratio factor, let's say, between them. If we name R1 the radius of the wheel applied to the motor and R2 the radius of the wheel applied to the load, we can say that the relationship among the two rotation velocities is the reverse of the ratio among the two radius. And of course, this is natural, because since we impose that the two wheels are in contact during the movement rotation, we must prefer the tangential velocity. And this implies that the product of the rotational velocity omega 2 of the second wheel times the radius R2 of the second wheel itself must be equal to the product omega 1 times R1 of the two similar magnitudes for the first wheel. For example, if the second radius is 3 times larger than the first one, the second velocity will be 3 times slower than the first one. This is suggested also by the intuition. However, since we know that the velocity is the derivative function of the corresponding angular rotation, We could also extend these considerations by saying that the relationship between the angular movements of the first wheel and the second wheel will correspond to the reciprocal or of the two radius of the cogwheels themselves. But remember that this is not always the typical use of a direct current motor. Looking at the figures that are shown in slide 76, we can also notice that the velocity reduction can be obtained by connecting several couples of adapters in series. For example, in the figure specifically reported into the slide, we see that we have a reduction factor equal to 3, and considering the two couples of cogwheels, we will have an overall reduction factor equal to 9. That is, if we put a series of a couple of adapters together, the final result, the final reduction factor in the velocity of the object that we want to make to rotate will be the product of all the single ratios between each wheel and its coupled one. Now let's make one step beyond and let's see what happens in terms of torque when we apply the previously mentioned adapters. We have to write and to introduce some formulas, but nothing really complicated. The starting point is the conservation of the mechanical power. So we can say that the product between the torque and the corresponding angular velocity that represents the mechanical power is preserved with or without using adapters. In the formula shown in the slide 77, we see that we expressed such a property by writing gamma times omega equal to gamma prime times omega prime. Notice that we have expressed those magnitudes relative to the presence of adapters with the apex prime. So gamma prime is the torque and omega prime is the rotational velocity of a system into which adapters have been introduced. We have said that due to the presence of adapters, the angular velocity will be reduced by a factor that is given by an integer number n, typically greater than 1. So we can write that omega is equal to n times omega prime. Omega is the velocity of the motor, for example, and omega prime is the velocity of the system, including the adapters. So, to preserve the balancing of the mechanical power, we have to write that gamma prime will be n times gamma. In other words, we will have a reduction in the torque exerted to the particular object connected to the motor. Having this in mind, we have to identify what are the quantities into which the applied torque to a device is split. In other terms, we can identify useful torques, that is, active part of the torque that we applied that really turns out into a useful work performed by the object that is connected to the motor itself. But we have also to identify passive torques that are those components that do not turn out into a effective movement or a effective force applied to a specific object. Part of the moment, part of the torque, in fact, that we apply is simply lost for making the motor to move. In other words, we can say that the gamma applied is the sum of active, that stands for useful torques, plus passive torques. In particular, from the previous courses, we remember that we have two components related to the characteristics of the motor. The first one is the component of the torque that is, let's say, devoted, lost, to win the inertia of the motor to start to move. And when we say inertia, we mean the geometric shape, the mass, and other quantities that, due to the nature of the motor, will oppose to its movement. But there is another component that will make us to lose part of the energy, of the power that we are applying, and this component is related to the friction. And we know from the physics that the part of the torque that is devoted to win the friction internal to the motor will be given by the product of its own rotational velocity times the friction coefficient. As well, we know that concerning the inertia component, the part of the torque that is necessary to consider devoted to win such a resistance will be given by the product of the inertia coefficient time the acceleration, rotational acceleration of the motor itself. And finally, we know that we have another quantity named gamma zero, that is what we can really exploit to move our device connected to the motor. Now the point is, what does this equation become if we consider not only the motor, but also those adapter included into it? We have to start from the equation that we have just now defined, gamma equal to gamma zero plus gamma lowercase time omega plus j, the inertial coefficient, time the rotational acceleration omega point, the derivative function. And we have to modify such an equation considering that, including adapters, gamma prime will be equal to n time gamma, and omega will be equal to n time omega prime. In other words, the equation can be rewritten as gamma prime divided by n equal to gamma zero plus gamma lowercase per time n time omega prime plus j, the inertial coefficient, time n time omega prime dotted, that is the derivative function. And this brings us to the final equation, that is gamma prime equal to n gamma zero plus the friction coefficient gamma lowercase time n square time omega prime plus j time n square time the derivative function of omega prime. Of course, this final equation doesn't consider that similar concepts can be applied also to the adapter itself, its own nature, I mean. In other words, even the cogwheel can require energy, mechanical power, I mean, devoted to win its own friction and its own inertial factor. So as we have to modify, to correct the equation, writing gamma prime equal to n times gamma zero plus the friction coefficient of the motor times n square times omega prime plus the inertia factor times n square times the derivative function of omega prime plus gamma r, that is the friction of the cogwheel, times omega prime, plus jr, that is the inertial factor of the cogwheel, times the derivative function of omega prime. Notice that the inertia of the cogwheel and perhaps even its own friction will be not very big, typically can be neglected. But in such a way, the equation is more precise. We have also to take into account that the mechanism through which the contact takes place is done through the presence of suitable expansions in the cogwheel, where one expansion of a cogwheel enters into the free space of the other one, and vice versa, with a mechanism similar to the contacts male-female in the plugs of the cables. So we understand that these contacts often are not very precise, and in the time they are subject to damages, they lose efficiency. All these considerations imply that this expression represents an approximation of what really happens when we include an adapter to a rotation motor. And such a device will be clearly applied only when not a big accuracy, a big precision are required in the control of the rotation that the motor can have.